recommend, stop. I'm allowing the department to do that. And then maybe if there are new people from the department, from the administration, maybe the deputy minister will introduce her own staff and that of the minister. Over to you, dear.
Thank you, Chair.
I hope they are here.
The head of office is not here. The last time I checked, she was sitting with you there. I don't know whether you sent her somewhere. My head of office, Uzoleka, probably she will come back. Is it Uzoleka Moon? I poached her from Water and Sanitation Ministry because poaching is allowed at this level. Because there are no rhinos here, it's human beings, so we can poach. Then I have Oleka Moon with me, Chair, as my head of office. And then the PLO is this young chap here, Christine Piri. Imaginyao, Chris, back born in Dana. Yeah, Christine Piri is my PLO MLO. With his qualification as a lawyer, Chair, is going to complement my work and my responsibilities. Uyamazu, Chair, former mayor Wangapaya. Chris Vike was a student here at UWC and also was an SRC president at UWC, so issues of leadership, at least we have understand. Those are the two that are here with us, Chairperson. And then your office is free to interact with him at any given point. He knows Baglalwa up, suggests that 24 hours, 365 days. Thank you, Chair. Minister's office is Sandile. Surely you are familiar with Sandile Nene. Sandile Lowa Wagudala. He's an advisor in the office of the minister. Now, again, I'm allowed to utilize him as and when and you need the advice. I'm allowed to ban the unregis. Yeah, because now we don't have advisors. Those are the people that I hear from the ministry. Thank you. Okay. So that's why a advisor, any expertise is the funding and alum siblings is the goal. Yeah, thank you.
That's okay. At the back there with Balloon.
Yeah.
PMG.
Yeah.
And then at the end there. From that other side. On your left, Omar Bandam. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is
Because
Donald is not doing
it.
Oh,
boss.
What's
happening?
You must
introduce yourself.
Okay.
I apologize, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members, Deputy Minister. I am very pleased to introduce the colleagues that have accompanied me from the capital city. And I just want to add that we are quite genuine in wanting to fill those positions. So some of the people you are seeing here are contenders for those vacancies. Chairperson, I had I had a proposal which I thought perhaps you can give me guidance on. The one is that I go through the presentation. It's about 34 slides. I can go through the first three sections of the presentation and then allow the acting CFO to talk to it, and then the individual members will speak to the work of each of the branches. That was the one. The other one was a little bit more tedious. It was to allow everybody to present their section, I'm hoping that you will guide me to go with the former. So let me start with the lady in the room. So, Tasneem Karim is the acting DDG responsible for content processing and dissemination. This is the part of the operation at GCIS that essentially looks after policy and research and the development of all of our products. She's accompanied by Mr. Kitume Sesemakani, who is acting as the DDG for corporate services. And corporate services is the anchor, really, of the organization. It provides IT, HR, and strategic planning support. Also with us is Geraldine Top. And Geraldine is working in the provincial and local liaison area, but she's here acting as the DDG, responsible for intergovernmental coordination. We have Mr. Henny Becker, who's here acting as the CFO, and he is the right-hand man of the CFO who is writing exams. So he couldn't be here with us today. The most important person here for us is our hostess, that's Liesel Surf, who actually runs our provincial, our parliamentary office here in Cape Town. And she basically keeps us informed to make sure that we understand what is happening in Parliament. We are responding to PQs in a coordinated way, and just keeps us towing the line when we are in the mother city. So, Chair, I'll be guided by you. I can go through the first two-thirds quite rapidly and then allow the CFO to speak, or I can allow each member to present their section as you please.
No, the first option will be fine.
The first option?
They will have a bite when you answer questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me then very quickly make a concession. And the concession is that Honorable Tsedi and Honorable Gungubela are actually quite right. I think the interesting part of the presentation is when we start to address the work that is actually being done. In the level of detail that gives us an opportunity to interrogate whether we're using our resources appropriately. And the point has been made previously by the team from the DOC that the reports that we are bringing you are numeric reports, but they don't actually give you a sense of what is actually happening in the work of the department. I will also say when we started, when the administration started, the reports of the GCIS used to be very different to what they are now. Most of the reports actually used to focus on the work. So we would bring case studies, we would demonstrate what we have done in the provinces, we would bring publications, and we would have discussions around those matters. But over the years, as the portfolio of organizations in the communications portfolio increased in number, we had less and less time to actually drill into the details of the work that was being done by the departments. So we are not here simply because we were looking for the easy way out. We are here because of a realization that time was of the essence, and we were not able to bring everything to the table. And over time, we've brought less and less and less content. I'm quite keen that we should be bringing more information to the portfolio committee to interact with, to review, to guide, and I'm hoping that the colleagues will add more color to the presentation as we go through it, because they are actually the experts on all of the work that I'm going to present. You've seen the standard layout. I won't dwell on the introduction and the strategic overview itself. It really boils down to two parts. The mandate, the constitutional mandate of the department, which is that we should be providing the public with timely, accurate, and accessible information. And the essence of it is that citizens can't participate in a functioning democracy if they are denied this information. What is also important there is the idea of nation building and patriotism, and it feeds in quite nicely into the work that is being done by Brand SA, among others, that talks about helping us to build a country identity. The strategy map, we've been through this several times. I won't dwell on it. We spoke to it on Monday. I would like, though, to go to the strategic objectives on page 5. It's mostly just as a recap to talk about what it is that we prioritize in the organization. So at the very center is this provision of strategic leadership and support in government communication. All of that work is driven and it's informed by opinion research and analysis of media coverage. And Tasneem, when we get to the questions, is going to tease out what actually happens in this area. And hopefully, when we get to the questions again, we'll have an opportunity, Honorable Sidi, to respond to the question that you had asked about evidence in terms of formulating our conclusions around the problem statement of the department. Corporate service function, when we get to that, Kitu will address some of the corporate service issues. We focus again on products, and the products essentially are both printed products as well as digital products, and the digital products are social media as well as broadcast content. We run a proactive engagement system. It's primarily media engagement, so we analyze the context in which information is being processed, what is happening in the country, and we respond to it either through media briefings, through press statements, as well as workshops with the media to put across government's perspective on a variety of issues. The space that Geraldine is focusing on talks to this idea of intergovernmental coordination. And the challenge here is how do we get the three spheres of government to speak with one voice on a variety of issues that allow us to align government communications. The next section talks about the informed and empowered citizenry, and I think I made that point earlier when I was saying that it's the essence of a functioning democracy. You want citizens to be engaged in all of the decision-making, and to have a voice in terms of the formulation of policy and public participation in government work. The communication services I've touched on, but they also include things like advertising, the management of the government brand, among others, which link to a degree with the work that is being done by the MDDA. There's a comprehensive situational analysis in the EPP. This doesn't really do it justice. We've written a four-page situational analysis, which looks at where South Africa is from a communication perspective, and it starts to tease out some of the challenges that we have. So this doesn't have the same nuance as what is in the situational analysis. I think I was saying to the team earlier on, when we were reading the detail of the situational analysis, it almost looked as though we had a crystal ball when we were analyzing some of the challenges that are going to come up in the government communication space. So what is on here on page 6 is really just a summary. We spoke about the limited financial resources, and our approach is just to look for better efficiencies and to partner with other departments, because the departments do have funding. It's just not as well spent as we have been able to do. So the idea here is to look for efficiencies and to work a lot more closely with other departments. The second area was around the increased demand for government communication, and it's critical. It's not just about the volume of inquiries that we are getting from South Africans as they understand their rights more and more, but we do have this issue, and I'll concede that from a language point of view, we can definitely do more. Our flagship product there is Vukuzenzele, the newspaper, and 1.8 million copies. It's useful, but it is not. It's not enough to really do the work that is confronting us. The communication environment. I touched on this last week. There are many voices now. A government isn't the only voice that speaks with authority. There are many other voices, which is how it should be in a thriving democracy. What we really need to be guarding against is making sure that we protect the quality of the information that we produce and that we present our information timelessly and transparently to all citizens. The public perception of government performance through forums like this, where we account and we give the public a sense of what it is that we are doing with the resources that they have given us, are quite important. And I have used the word communicating honestly, because it is true that while there is much that we have achieved, there are areas where we have underperformed, and these need to be brought to the fore so that we are able to improve on our performance as government. The all the parts that are there highlighted in red, which are the vacancies, they were advertised by the DPSA on Friday. They subsequently appeared in the weekend press, and we've listed all these positions on our websites, social media, and we have cast our net quite wide because we want to make sure that we can get the best possible people into the organization. Program one.
You said
they are
highlighted red.
On my screen they are red. Where it says vacant. Sorry. It says vacant in red letters. My apologies.
Yes. No, that's fine.
Oh. it's cost-cutting measures.
They've cut the balls.
On program one, this is the area where we are really focusing on the ability to deliver the managerial services of the organization in a cost-efficient manner. I think it's an area where we've done a lot of innovation. This whole idea of doing more with less has really happened in this space. And I would like to think that we can probably do more. One of the things that we are discovering is that government departments are not good at sharing innovation. So We might have a good idea, and other departments don't acknowledge it. And one of the things that we are driving through knowledge management is this ability to look at pockets of excellence across the public service and start creating leaner structures that actually make our jobs not only easier through technology, but also more cost-effective in line with the challenges that we have with the budget. The primary objective of Program 1, I'm on page 9, is to provide adequate and effective corporate service functions in pursuit of good governance. We didn't list the date, but we've tabled our APPs, and we are hard at work in making sure that all of the quarterly reports that are submitted to National Treasury, to the DPME, and to the Executive Authority are delivered on time. And as importantly for us, that the documents are of a good quality. The annual report was also tabled within the legislated time frames, and we always look forward to coming through and presenting our quarterly reports so that we can have an assessment of the work that has been done. The one area that for us we think is a risk, and towards the end of the presentation I've reflected on some of those risks, is the area of IT. Our IT infrastructure really connects the head office in Hatfield with our other 10 offices around the country. And we are so dependent on technology to make sure that we're able to keep that system interconnected. So it's an area that I'll touch on, and I'm sure Henny is going to talk about it when he gets to the budget. On page 10, I'm continuing under administration. The annual financial statements are always prepared, and in fact, we are signing them off. We have an updated risk-based internal audit plan. We are quite strong on compliance, and I think the evidence of that is really in the fact that we've been able to bring to the portfolio committee our performance, and working with the AG's office, we are able to reflect on what areas we can improve, and hopefully we are also going to try and retain for the third year, hopefully, fingers crossed, a clean audit. The HR plan is very, very important to us, because this is where most of our investment goes into. It's a people business, so our planning around HR is focused on ensuring that the environment in which we operate not only attracts talent to the organization, but we are able to retain talent and keep them and progress them through the ranks of the organization so that we do not lose any institutional memory. The content processing and dissemination area that's led by Tasneem focuses on ensuring that we are developing a suite of products, communication products, communication strategies that are coherent, of a high quality, and give us the opportunity to respond to emerging issues in the communications environment. On page 12, the objective is really crystallized as follows. This branch exists to grow the share of voice of government messages in the public arena. This is what everybody in that branch wakes up to do. Whether it's Vukuzenzele, the newspaper, the public sector manager, the magazine that goes to SMS members, the South African Yearbook, the Pocket Guide, which is distributed mainly to schools, or even in the work that we're doing in terms of translating content for use by South Africans in all the 11 official languages. So it is the closest thing that we have in the organization to a publishing hub. I think what is interesting, and you'll see on page 13, which is the slide that follows, the content isn't only printed content, but we're also developing content on websites. So we manage the government websites. We have content on Flickr. We have content on YouTube, which are videos of various ministers demonstrating government at work. We have a very active Twitter page with various Twitter handles, as well as content on our provincial Facebook pages. The idea with the electronic section of this branch is to make information available not only to South Africans, but these portals also serve as an important entry point for people outside South Africa who want to understand the work of government, our policies, as well as how the South African government functions. The reports that are there are really about compliance, so we make sure that we monitor on a daily basis the performance of the individual websites. We look at the performance of the social media accounts. Although at this stage we are not responding in real time to issues as they emerge on social media, what we're doing is we're posting content so that we can get more exposure for government messages. On page 14, the section that talks about policy and research is important because all of the work that we do is grounded on an understanding of not only the communication environment, but we make time to actually find out the pulse of South Africans, how they understand the country to be developing, as well as their perceptions on a range of government services. And Tasneem will talk about this a little bit later, because I think it's important that when we look at government, the perceptions of government services, we understand that South Africans perceive these services in the different spheres in very different ways that are quite dynamic and they impact on how we develop our communication strategies. Of course, we have these Pulse of the Nation reports, and I think we all agree that the important stuff is when we engage with these reports and we can start assessing whether they are making a difference to our work. On page 15, we do a lot of content analysis, and the content analysis essentially is to have an understanding of what is in the various media types so that it can inform our messages, and as importantly, it gives us the opportunity to respond to emerging issues and to clarify government's position. We do inside newsletters, which we publish. These are specialist publications that focus on policy to make sure that government, the public service, understands our policies in an in-depth way that allows them to explain to the public as and when they are asked on key interventions. The Media Landscape publication is a book that we publish every 2 years, and it's an important one because it is one of the tools that we use to measure transformation in the media landscape. And we look, among other things, not only at the actual content and whether there's content diversity, but also the ownership of media, the mediaship patterns, ownership of advertising spend, and we start to use this publication to do some forecasting in terms of how we believe the media landscape is going to change in the medium term. On page 16, it talks about the Communication Service Agency. This was established in essence to help government to coordinate its communication campaigns, particularly the awareness campaigns, and the work around media buying happens in this space. The targets are high because, as I said earlier, because CCIS doesn't have the funds, our approach is to go and proactively look for work from individual government departments and to bring that work into the GCIS and to implement those campaigns. A good example is the World Economic Forum on Africa. It's a campaign that is led by the National Treasury, but the implementation work is being done by GCIS as well as Brand SA. So we are insourcing campaigns from other departments so that we can actually implement the work. We of course provide photographic services, video services, we have the radio studios and we broadcast the community radio news content twice daily, Monday to Friday. What we also do in the Communication Service Agency is to manage government's brands, and it's the first line that you see there on page 17. There are a lot of government departments, a lot of government entities, and they are all developing sub-brands that are targeting various South Africans, various South African target audiences, but also projecting our image outside our borders. Everything from coasters, flyers, t-shirts, corporate identity for buildings, events, corporate identity comes through this organization so that we are able to look at the actual quality and make sure that we are presenting government's work in the best possible light. In terms of the marketing services, one of the things that we have expanded is because we have this distribution infrastructure that is distributing newspapers and magazines, we're also starting to offer distribution as a service to other government departments, and it's an interesting area of growth. We think that in the future, when the post office is up and running, they found their feet, we can definitely do a lot more in this space, working in partnership with the post office. The printed products I touched on earlier, just for emphasis, it's the newspaper Vukuzenzele, but we also take pride in our annual report, and we are quite sure that all the members have a copy under their pillows to refer to, as the work in there is quite important. Program 3, which is the intergovernmental coordination, Geraldine's area of specialization, really talks to the idea of building and maintaining a coherent communications hub through the three spheres. And in doing this, we understand that we are working as partners with the media in order to drive government's communication agenda. So a very large component of this work is around media engagement. Now, it is anchored on government's program of action, and all our work cascades from the State of the Nation address. And we start to unpack the commitments that have been made by the President in the State of the Nation address into the State of the Province addresses and into the various areas of work of the national and provincial departments. To make it work, it requires us to workshop not only media people, so the senior journalists, but to also engage with government officials to ensure that we are all on the same page and we understand what the outputs are stemming from that State of the Nation address. We also run the post-cabinet media briefings. If it's not possible to actually have a briefing, we will issue statements after every cabinet statement, after every cabinet meeting. And as importantly, we run rapid response meetings where we assess what is happening. Every morning we page through the papers and we are responsive to the issues that emerge around the country, not only national issues, but we want to also understand what is happening from a communications perspective in response to emerging issues in provincial and local government. The clusters are an important area of work. It's a coordinating mechanism. It's the closest thing that we would have to the MINMEX. But in the cluster environment, we have cluster coordinators that work in partnership with heads of communications in other departments. And it's here that we try and align our messages and our programs. As you can imagine, we only have a fixed number of days in the year, and we need to utilize government's communication resources so that we don't have a lot of communication clutter. So we prioritize which messages are going to go out when during the year through these forums. And we focus very much on ensuring that through the internal communicators forums, we use the platforms that we have in the departments to continuously engage with the employees of government so that they too become ambassadors in promoting our work outside of advertising, public relations, events, and so forth. We put a fair amount of effort into training, and one of the areas that we have been hard at work on, having observed what the Film and Publication Board has done, working in collaboration with UNISA, we are also engaging on a process where we are structuring an MOU for UNISA to start delivering distance learning communication courses for government communicators, because we've understood that we can't run all of this training from the center. It is much more effective to allow the system itself to engage with a distance communicator so that we can improve the quality of government communication. We meet with the heads of communications regularly to assess progress, and those reports are used as a diagnostic tool to understand whether or not the communicators are doing the work to the best of their ability. In that provincial and local liaison space, we run a number of activations that are aligned to government's communication program. So the number that you see there of 1,200 development communication activations looks large, but the reality is that these communication activations happen in all 9 provinces, and we have structured programs with themes for each month. So this month, most of our work is focusing on Africa Month and promoting the African Union in communities around the country. We also spend a fair amount of effort marketing and promoting our Tusong Center so that we can continuously ensure that the products that we offer through the Tusong Service Center are mostly relevant to communities, but also that the communities are accessing our services, government services, through the Tusong Service Centers. The flagship program on this page is the InBizo program that is a commitment that has been made by the executive. All ministers are supposed to run a minimum of 10 InBizo events in the year to go out to communities, to explain the work of the departments, to take feedback, but more importantly, to give accurate reporting on what work has been done since the principals had listened and interacted with communities. It's complemented by a publication called My District Today. It's a weekly electronic newsletter that is published in all of our municipalities. We did a fair amount of work around the strategic risks, and we are not going to take the credit for this area of work. I think with the interactions that we have had on and off with the portfolio committee, it was clear that we needed to start drilling into the organizational risks with a little more detail. So on page 22, if I can start with the first one that talks about the inability to provide relevant information to targeted audiences. And I will say that we've been very candid here. I'm not saying that these risks are going to happen, but when we develop strategic risks, we always look at the worst-case scenario and work backwards from there to see how we can mitigate against the risks. So the root causes really of not being able to provide relevant information timelessly to South African citizens is, one, because we are not able to extract the content timelessly from the client departments. Two, we have constraints in terms of resourcing. So it's one thing to get the information, but to then translate it into multiple languages requires resources, most definitely translation resources, publication resources, etc., so that we can put that into our products and platforms. The third area that we've started to look at more closely is whether departments are actually using the correct platforms to talk to South Africans. So the question has to be asked whether we should be using newspapers if we know that in some of the areas of South Africa that we're going into, literacy levels are not as high. Surely we should be using radio so that we can be more engaging and get feedback from communities. The plan is to develop a segmented approach, and GCIS has developed a segmentation tool, and I'm sure there will be a time when we can share the segmentation tool with you. It's, we think that it's very much at the cutting edge of target audience segmentation. We're looking forward to not only using it for government communication, but we want to share it with the industry as a tool. The second strategic risk is an inability to lead and influence the issues in the environment timelessly. And this stems from ineffective cluster system and a lack of capacity more broadly in the government communication system, non-responsiveness and uncooperative responses of government programs and government officials. It's not every department that is capacitated to the extent that when queries arrive, questions are being asked, they're able to efficiently and effectively respond to them. A lack of timeous and relevant content is one of the causes that delays our ability to respond quickly to situations as they emerge, particularly in local government communications. So this idea of having a rapid response mechanism, we're cascading it from national into our provincial government offices, where we are encouraging through the provincial directors for local government to anchor their rapid response system on the mechanism that is provided in the provincial RR offices. We write opinion pieces, we develop key messages so that we're able to articulate government's views in a proactive way to the public. The third strategic risk on page 23 is the inability to attract human capital. And I think the challenge that we have is that the communications environment is changing quite quickly. So in as much as the colleagues from DOC were talking about the broadband environment and how broadcast will have to change to the broadcast and to the how broadcast will have to change to the broadband environment, communicators also need to embrace this new wave of change. It has meant that we've had to start looking at recruiting from unusual areas to find different people who can contribute to the solutions that we develop in our department. So we have to guard against ineffective HR policies so that we don't have bias creeping into the system. We need to constantly be looking at our procedures, particularly in terms of recruitment. We need to understand the regulation restrictions so that the work environment is properly placed to attract a diverse workplace, not only in terms of age, because we're conceding that we are not able to predict how the media is going to change, but we also want to be representative from a gender perspective as well as from a racial perspective. What's important here then is that we, as we develop a more diverse work environment, that we understand that the performance management tools need to be aligned to the fact that we are dealing with different generations of employees in the workplace. So we have HR policies that are reviewed annually. We workshop them with the staff. We spend a fair amount on training and development. And of late, we've started to look at placing some of our communicators in professional environments, in newsrooms, so that we're able to understand how things are changing in the newsroom. The assessment of qualifications and criminal records is key. It's a given this is something that we do on an ongoing basis. The last point, the failure to effectively support the execution of the GCIS mandate. The only reason why we would not be able to do this is if, for whatever reason, GCIS no longer had the funds to pursue its mandate. But our take on it so far has been to strengthen the systems, to look at developing strategies that are compliant, that are effective, and by looking at innovation in much of the spaces that we currently are operating in. On page 24, just some notes that point to some of the changes that we have made in the ATP. so that if you are looking at them as a series over time, you'd be able to pick up why they have changed. One, the language services requests, GovComs, which is a supplement that is published in Public Sector Magazine, the Pocket Guide, which we are now publishing as a DVD, as well as the corporate identity services that we provide to government broadly, have been moved from the APP itself and put into the operational plans. So they are still there. They are being evaluated and assessed by the audit team, as well as the external auditors, the Auditor General. But for the purposes of our APP, we've removed these so that we can focus on the strategic issues. So we've tried by all means to look at the things that are within our control. So corporate identity, yes, we are overseeing corporate identity, but we've acknowledged that with the resources that we have, we cannot provide a corporate identity for the entire government. The same goes for enhancing the image of government. Where we are able to intervene, we do this to make sure that we defend the reputation of government. But we have acknowledged that this is not an area that we have total control for, and as a result, that has gone into our operational environment. On page 25, on intergovernmental coordination, the forum that we had was the Government Communicators Forum and the Internal Communicators Forum. Now, these forums would meet twice a year, and they would meet after we have taken direction from the State of the Nation Address and the Cabinet Lekgotla, or the two Cabinet Makgotla. We would then align all of government's work with communicators in these forums. But of late, what we have learned is that it is much more effective to, instead of opening the GCFs to every single communicator in government and having everybody from the entire government system participating, come through at different levels, we are focusing on the heads of communications. So this would be the heads of communications in the national departments, the heads of communications in the Premier's offices, and we are workshopping the communication strategies with them. It has reduced the number of days that we take in terms of implementing this forum, but it's given us the opportunity to focus more on the strategic discussions. We always had trouble projecting the number of communication projects that were going to be implemented in any given year. In the past, we would exceed the target substantially. And we used to have lots of arguments between the Auditor General as well as our colleagues at DPME about what the baseline should be for communication projects that we implement. And after much trying and explaining to them that when you are in a system that is responding to events as they unfold, it's difficult for you to make a projection and say, this year there will only be 8 campaigns, or this year there will only be 12 campaigns. Whereas we all know that the communication landscape is very dynamic. So we removed this from our APP, and we're tracking it in our operational plan. The last section is really talking about funding, I'm going to allow Henny to talk to this. It starts with a summary, and you'll go into some of the detail in terms of how we can afford to pay for lunch.
Chairperson, honourable members, honourable DM, other colleagues, I will take you through the budget of GCIS for 17-18 financial year, the current financial year, as well as the the carry-through effect of that over the two outer years of the MTF, as it is indicated in the IPP. Perhaps just to mention is that for the past three financial years, we actually received clean audits. We also intend to have a clean audit, or our objective, our aim for this year is to have another clean audit for the 16-17 financial year. But linked to that, I think we need to also take into consideration that our spending of the budget was in the previous, or the first 2 years of those three, were 99.9% each year. And in the 16-17 financial year, ended now at the 31st of March, was 98.7%. The 1.3% saving was due to the vacancies that we have, and of course the funds were ring-fenced by National Treasury. Now, why I want to bring that also into perspective is that for those financial years, we also had budget reductions, compulsory budget reductions from National Treasury, due to the, of course, the economy. It was on average about 14, 15 million rand per annum, and irrespective of that, we still had to reprioritize. We still had to find plans actually to stay within the budget and not and actually prevent unauthorized expenditure. That actually excludes also what CFO of DOC indicated earlier this morning, is that our startup funding assisting the after startup funding for DOC. It excludes those. So the whole budget in the outer years will be also taking those measures into consideration. On that specific slide, on page of slide number 26, you will see there the 17-18 total appropriation is 404.75 million, rounded off 404.8. Now that has a carry-through effect with inflation adjustment over the MTF of around 6.5% per annum, and that is on the prescribed measures of National Treasury. I will take you through the slides where the allocations or the appropriations for programs are then in more detail. On the next slide, slide number 27. Is program 1, 2, and 3 with the 17-18 financial year specific there. Compensation of employees consists of or is appropriated 236.8 million, which is around 58.5% of the total budget. The GCIS is a labor-intensive department, and that is also why you will see that the compensation of employees is more than goods and services. However, one should bear in mind that the cost reductions or the budget reductions being done previously was on goods and services and not on personnel. Goods and services is 166.7 million out of the total budget, which converts to 41.2%. Of that 41.2% or the goods and services, 166 million, approximately 132.5 million is contractual obligations, leaving us then with little room for other communication services, ad hoc services, or ad hoc requests that might come. The next slide, 28. Is on the sub-programs of Program 1 over the MTF period. I'm going to skip that one and go and take you to the next one, slide number 29, which then gives us an indication of the sub-program projected expenditure for this year in Program 1. The main cost drivers there is under the corporate services sub-program, mainly the computer services, and then also we have external audit fees under that program, of which the cost, of course, escalates every year, and I believe that is with all departments. And then also our building cost, office accommodation, is also paid from that specific program. On the next slide, slide 30, is our program 2 over the MTF period, and I'm taking you to the next one, slide number 31, which will also then reflect the sub-program expenditure projected expenditure. The main cost drivers there will be our Boekers & Zeller newspaper, which include the printing and distribution cost, total around about 31, 32 million per annum. We also have our research activities there, and then also, of course, also our government communication products, like the ESA yearbook, etc., and what IDG indicated previously. I think let's go to the next slide, which is slide number 32. It's program 3, also indication per MTF period, and the next one is then the one for the 17-18 financial year, also indicating then the sub-programs. Now, this is our program that also liaise, or the main cost driver there, of course, is our provincial offices, as well as our media engagement and our supervision, our clusters, assistance with the clusters. Our provincial and local liaison sub-program is also labor-intensive. The most or the biggest highest cost driver there will be subsistence and travelling and communication because of the nature of the work that is being done there. Chairperson then and members, I also just want to take you through just the indication of with regard to our policies. Annually, we as a department review our financial policies in line with National Treasury prescripts. We want to stay within those, or we actually stay within those requirements. And it's not only for cost reduction measures and actually to not have any fat in our budget. We basically have no fat in the budget. We do not have any fat in the budget. But also to make sure that we are spending our funds appropriately and according to which it was allocated for. We prevent unauthorized expenditure, we prevent irregular expenditure, and through our policies we actually want to adhere to the National Treasury processes. We are in harmony with National Treasury, we have regular meetings with them in order to make sure that we do adhere to all those requirements. I think the committee may be aware of what constraints that the department may have. The funding pressures that we do experience, is not to say that I request additional funds, I'm just saying funding pressures that we do experience are in the area of information technology, facilities management, which is also our building as well as the maintenance thereof, and then external audit fees. Just to bear in mind that with regard to office accommodation, our lease according to the contract is actually escalating on a higher than the annual inflation rate adjustment of which funds are appropriated by National Treasury. That results, of course, then annually that we need to reprioritize our budget in order to stay within that projected expenditure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is that all? No, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair.
Ahmad Donald.
I'm darker when I'm at the other end of the room. I forgive you, Chair. I wanted to conclude, Chairperson, by saying that the colleagues are here. Because I think they can all make important contributions to the conversation. When we do take questions, if you will permit me then to allow them to
not at all.
To respond.
Don't close the door.
No problem.
I'm taking care of.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
All right, members, that's the presentation. Questions? You will bear with me. You can see today I'm not stable. I'm not that stable. I have a 92-year-old mother who's very ill. So, yeah, I'm in and out because of the calls and all of that. Okay, Honorable Teddy. Honorable Van Dam, Honorable Van Dee, Honorable Van Dolash. Yeah, no matter where you're Van Dam, Van Dee, you must have Van Dolash.
Gender balance,
Van Dee. Van Dee. That, thanks, Chair. And thanks, Donald, for the presentation. My take is that ourselves as politicians, over and above your spokespersons in departments and municipalities are supposed to be very, very key in terms of assisting you to be ambassadors in terms of these messages that we're talking about. That's why at some stage we had suggested that perhaps we need to be recipients of some of these things that you send to these people. Your daily updates and all these other things, so that you are then able to have this coordinated approach in terms of the challenge, that the risk that you spoke about earlier of having uncoordinated messages when we have one government. Instead of me receiving, I'm receiving not less than 500 emails a day now from people who are lobbying me to vote in a particular manner for the motion of no confidence. 500, not less than 500 a day. So I'm saying, instead of these things, it will be more useful for me to get this information that you're talking about. Your daily updates, your opinion pieces, so that we are then able to be more empowered as politicians, especially at this level, from the Portfolio Committee on Communications. To me, I think it's key. So that, as I've indicated, that we are able to be to compliment you in the work that you are doing. My challenge up front, before I continue, I might not be able to make an indication in terms of the page, but I think as I raise some of these issues, you'll be able to see where am I getting these things from. Your Tucson Service Centers, to me, you raised it in your presentation, this program. But we'll appreciate if you can as well try and update us on, from your analysis, how effective are these centers. What mechanism do you have to monitor to ensure that it indeed they do the kind of work that they're supposed to be doing. You see the strategic plan, your strategic objective that talks to your sharing of messages across the three spheres, and my main focus will mainly be at local level. That do we if I were to go to I'll always give an example of my municipality, Makado, where I come from, to the Department of Communications in that municipality, will I get a feel of the Department of Communications, the Department of Government Communications, if I were go to that communication section in the department. As I've indicated, I'm relating it to your strategic objective. This one that talks to sharing of messages across the three spheres. There was one slide where I saw one position seconded, and no person who is responsible for that particular responsibility. Is it a function that has been seconded and there is no person? What does it mean? Because I thought so I was asking myself as you were presenting that a responsibility has been seconded and there is no person there. So we'll appreciate if you can just clarify that one. The second last one, your link with Brand South Africa, your work, the kind of work that you are doing vis-a-vis Brand South Africa, just to for us to understand these things, can you clarify that link? It might be advisable for us to know that kind of link. I know with media landscape, if I were to say, why would you release this publication once in 2 years and not on annual basis, you'll tell me budgetary constraints. But to me, you know, media space is something that is changing very, very fast. And I was asking myself, why not on annual basis? Because this space, in the manner in which it has been operating, just in the last 3 months, a lot of things have changed. But the year is this publication that you're saying is a media landscape. You only publish it once in 2 years. As I've indicated, maybe you'll give me a different answer beside the budgetary constraints that I just thought is one of the reasons why. You touched the issue that we spoke about last week at the strategic planning session. This thing of departments, municipalities and entities that are not assisting community radios to do the kind of work that they're supposed to be doing in terms of them putting their advert there, instead relying on your national papers, even on matters that are supposed to be handled at local level. now that you have raised it now, because you remember part of what we suggested was an audit of how government departments, municipalities, and our entities are giving support to community radios. We requested that kind of an audit. Now that you have raised it, my question would be, is it what role are you then going to play yourself over and above MDDA? So you can just try and clarify that one. Because I think we need this area to be attended to as a matter of agency, so that at our level, as we have indicated, we are then able to crack the whip and meet with the necessary structures that are supposed to ensure that these things do happen for community radios to get the necessary support. Let me pause there.
That's all right. I'm very worried. It's very hot here.
Very hot. Almost
asleep. And if we're going to continue in this committee room, we can't be productive. Somebody must go and talk to you. I mean, if we're supposed to be here to work,
South Africa. I think that's a valuable resource, particularly for members of parliament, for anyone who wants information about governments in South Africa, that's a valuable publication. But I'm not convinced about Vuk'uzenzele and PSM. What value add does that bring? How much money is spent on publishing them? How many people read them? I mean, there has to be a correlation there. And I know you've given me this answer before, but I'm not convinced. You need to convince me. And then advertising spend. Now, I'm not quite sure how it works, but advertising for government departments and ministries, does it go through GCIS, or do ministries, you know, publish? You often get in the Sunday Times, you know, a two-page spread with a big picture of the minister, you know, which is really designed to kind of self-glorification process, essentially. Mm-hmm. But a lot of money is spent on these big adverts in national newspapers, which are not designed really to communicate any specific message other than to give that specific member of the executive, you know, good PR. So is there any coordination about that? And then also with Honorable Zedi's question, is there any coordination in that regard to make sure that municipalities, for example, advertise in local publications and not the Sunday Times? For example, if the municipality of Buffalo City advertises in the Sunday Times, that's a waste. It's wasteful expenditure. They should rather be advertising in publications specific to the municipality. So, is there any coordination about that too?
My question this morning, one advisor said that the presentation that was delivered, he said no coherent community media framework to promote the participation of all communities in the national discourse. This is one of the, it's also an issue. How would you respond to this, and how would you address it?
No question.
No further question.
Honorable Fantola.
No further
question. No, honorable Chair. Thanks, Che. I'm sorry about this. Last week, the GCIS made a very for me, what I get here is not so different from what we had. However, I had an impression, acting DG, that you are in a process of trying to address exactly what Honorable Van Damme is raising, the coordination between spokespersons of the different departments. I heard you articulating that process, and if I'm correct, I would love to hear you more about that, because where I'm sitting, it's always a concern, especially after the SASA debacle, and really everybody's concerned. But also, as you articulated on the risk here, I am not sure, again, on your coordination of the messaging. For instance, we know for a fact that there's drought, where water scarce kinds of the country. But time and again, you are not coherent in communicating that fact. That is not going to change anymore, anyway, in the next 2 years or so. Of which, for me, I think that message is supposed to be central into messaging, whether it's bi-monthly or whatever way. But things like that, that are the issues that we know for a fact that whether it's Wednesday, Friday, or next year, this kind of a challenge is in fact happening, and government does have strategies in trying to address it. However, it needs more of partnership from everybody else to make sure that we avoid some of the things that may happen in between of us going through drought, because drought is like it is there. Therefore, at the center of that, for me, the GCIS is supposed to be coherent in trying to compete, because we are now leaving it with individual municipalities and sometimes with provinces, that also themselves are not as consistent. And when chiefs are down, we know for a fact that that comes back to the national government. All the time, the father figure is the national department. So when things don't happen, it goes back to the national department. But lastly, we are sitting in a country that is nurturing democracy, as you are correctly saying. Are we not supposed to consistently communicate those things that we are able to do, especially the things that we are still not able to do? I'm asking this question, DG, for the fact that as democracy is growing, everything is taken to court. Everybody has to say, the government did not do this, then court must really attend to this, and so on and so on. And in majority of times, of all the time, government will be able to do some certain things at a particular time. And government, for all, like all other governments, might not be able to do some of the things until some other time. Are we able to consistently, to GCIS, to communicate that? Because that space is now being left with anybody who sometimes is opportunistic. And now that we have attracted international NGOs that have got sometimes an agenda that is not, does not belong to all of us here, it's a fact. They are here now with different agendas. Some of those agendas are not really for the poor people. They are not friendly to the poor. In fact, they are hostile to the poor. So if we agree on that, how can we make sure that we're able to communicate to our people, because they have a right to know whether the government is able to do things or not, because we are not doing things because we plan not to. There are limitations. But the government, through UGCIS, is unable to coherently communicate to our people all these that are good things that the government is doing, and all these that are good things that the government is still unable to do, which for me, I mean, it does not need a file to understand that over this MTS period, there are things that we'll be able to achieve. However, there are things that we might not be able to achieve, even if we would love to. So that will be my broad take insofar as this matter is concerned. I'm happy that the acting GM is going to come to the department has been acting for a long time.
Acting GM?
No, I'm sorry, acting, I'm referring to you, Deputy Minister, to say I'm happy that this acting thing in the department is coming to an end. The committee to say, and even DJ, there's a process of trying to make sure that those vacancies that are not filled yet are going to be filled. I'm not saying we're acting, I can't. You are not acting as full time appointed by the President of the Republic as Deputy Minister of Education. Thank you.
Things that we say, Mr. Donald DePoko, Mr. DePoko, now, and things that we said 6 months ago for improving visibility in our areas, I think comrades keep on hammering on that, utilizing our parliamentary constituency offices, utilizing a number of avenues where information can be disseminated on your part. It's quite critical for citizens' awareness of our department. I know we are doing some work in terms of, even if my 92-year-old mother can't read, which she can't, because she never went to school. But there is a grandson who can read for her, to say, here is a document, talks about ABC. It's from government communications. It's talking about the issues. So I think those things are very important. So that as we engage you, you then improve on those matters. There is nothing much, members, that we can say beyond what we have said, we just need to get the responses. Dolasha was saying, I want to hear you more on these particular issues. And that's what we need to hear. Honorable Kumbele, you were out, but issues are not new. It's what we dealt with last week and another day. DM, over to you.
Chair, I think some of the issues which are raised by the members of parliament, I can resonate with. For an example, the issue of communication at the level of local government. Yes, GCIS is there, but GCIS is not popular at the level of local government. Why I'm saying this is that last week I was invited to an LNG of one municipality in Mpumalanga. Now, when I presented what the department does and different entities and the panel that reports to us, GCIS was one department which I suggested that the municipalities should utilize more. But to my surprise, none of those mayors, municipal managers, etc., that knew about GCIS. And it was a shock for me. But then in the end of the meeting, when I introduced the team from GCIS, this one guy who is a communicator of that particular municipality said, but why don't you tell the Deputy Minister that I am working with you? You know, and the mayor said, but why should this guy tell us? We should see and we should feel that you are working with GCIS. We should not be told. Now, that's one challenge. Now, you might not see GCIS at your local municipality in Limpopo based on the fact that communicators that are there do not utilize GCIS and its resources meaningfully, or to an extent that begins to make GCIS visible to that particular municipality. I think that's something that GCIS should do, ensure that communicators of the municipalities are empowered more than ever, because I hear acting DG putting emphasis on the provincial government. And for me, all provincial governments have a muscle to communicate their own. But where the crux of the matter in terms of services delivery are at the local level. So that challenge which you have raised, it's there. It's not fallacy, I know. I had confronted it myself a few days ago. In my other life, Chair, I worked for Eskom. Eskom had something called corporate identity, meaning that you cannot communicate outside the parameters of corporate identity of Eskom. Now, with GCIS, it is true that we need something like that. That's why there's this loose communication by the departments when there's a government entity that is supposed to coordinate all the communication of government entities so that we avoid issues of chachalaza and so on that would trend on Twitter, tarnishing the government itself. Now, we need that kind of an arrangement with GCIS. Fortunately, the acting DG knows my views. Now, for us to reach out to people who are unable to read or write, GCIS has more than 200 and some odd community radio stations where they have spaces. How we utilize those community radio stations becomes very important and imperative for us to communicate government and give government deliverables and give space to our local government where necessary, because the space is there paid for by GCIS. So we really need to reach out using those community radio stations. The challenges of community radio stations, they are there and they are a lot. We are saying here that departments should assist community radio stations in terms of advertisement and so on. You know, where I'm sitting, Chair, I was in KZN, visited a community radio station which wrote to me through Facebook Messenger. Subsequent to that, I said, no, Kalogo, I'm no longer a Facebooker now. Send those through an email. I visited that community radio station. The third part is that they get all these advertisement arrangements with the departments, including these desires of ours. They do advertisement, run their programs, but when it comes to payment, they don't get paid. Now that remains a challenge for the community radio stations. They can't sustain themselves, but when we're sitting in these meetings, we're saying, let's do this, let's do that, then we give them, but payment, dololo. Now those are the things that I think if we really want to utilize these community radio stations meaningfully, we need to pay them on time as service providers, departments, and so on and so forth. So all the things which I think you have raised here are things that ourselves, when we're doing the assessment of GCIS holistically, we had pinched those loopholes which we need to tighten up moving forward, Chairperson. Also, Chair, I want the committee to also encourage GCIS to carry the Department of Communications financially moving forward. We are also housed at their own building. We don't have our building, Tina, as Department of Communications. Now, GCIS is of help to us, so they must be encouraged that they must house us until. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure until you tell us. We can grab coffee and tea. There is also poison there. Poison biscuits. Can you follow, Donald?
Chair, thank you very much. The Deputy Minister is far from me. I was going to not here under the table. Sometimes I thought she was crossing on the other side, not exposing us. Thank you very much for the questions. There are a lot of important matters that have been raised. And I want to say that If you look at GCIS, since this new administration and the location of GCIS and the kind of aftercare that we are now getting, because we have a minister and a deputy minister, it has really made us to reconsider our products, our approach. So I think it's been quite effective. I won't say anything about youth because I think I'm still youthful. But I'm still youthful. But us embracing new platforms and all of these other innovations is really as a result of the fact that the leadership as well has changed. The demographics of the leadership is different. But on a maybe starting with some good news, just to say, before the deputy minister was appointed, we partnered with SALGA. About 2 years ago, we had a meeting with SALGA in which we identified that we need to strengthen the communication system at the local government level. And we mapped out SALGA offices in the provinces and GCIS offices, and we could see that if we worked together, we could actually begin to change the landscape of local government communication. So in March, last month, we had our first SALGA Communicators Forum, and that forum is a forum where GCIS and Brand SA are both partners with SALGA. We started with our colleagues inducting new ward councillors last year after the elections, and this year what our focus was on energizing the communication system and just getting much closer to the communicators that are in local government. A lot of the feedback that we got from those communicators was an impatience. They also understand. We want to have this coherence that Honorable Teddy spoke to. We definitely want to make sure that happens. And what they have said to us is, you know what, we lack a policy framework that is going to allow us to be equipped to argue in our various forums. When a municipal manager argues a point in a council meeting, they can talk to a specific piece of legislation. Where is the one for communicators? Tasneem is going to talk to that government communication policy, how far we are in terms of developing that policy and how soon it's going to be implemented. And in that conversation, we'll also tease out how we believe that communicators in other departments should be interacting with the GCIS and the kind of guidance that we are going to be providing. I will say in the minister's absence that one of the things that the minister has insisted on is that communicators must meet at GCIS on a monthly basis. So the idea of us meeting twice a year after Makota is not going to be how we operate going forward. We have developed dashboards that report on the performance of departments by month, so we are able to track them. And the minister is now saying, it's not enough for me to get the written report. Put the communicators in the room. I want them to account directly on what work it is that they have actually done. On the advertising, there's two components to the advertising. We've done the same thing where we have monthly reports. Unfortunately, Honorable Teddy, we are not able to give you the full universe. In other words, our audit is only as good as the information that we have in our suspense account. So in other words, we can account for every rand that is spent by government departments using GCIS's media buying system. Every rand. What we haven't been able to account for is the money that is being spent by national departments, provincial departments, local municipalities outside of the GCIS system. It is doable, but it requires resources. It would mean that we would have to bring a third party on board. We would outsource the work. And I've seen it done before. The cost is a little bit prohibitive, so we'd only be able to do that report once a year. But what we are able to do in GCIS is to provide a monthly report that gives a detailed breakdown of every cent, every media owner, so that you have a good idea of how government advertising funds are being allocated. I wanted Henny to talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that we have in terms of allocating the advertising spend. So why is it that we have not been able to get government departments to increase our current allocation, which is sitting on about 14-15%, which is approximately 30 million rand per annum, to the 30% that the portfolio committee had intended us to meet. And he'll talk a little bit about it, but we do have a gap. We can probably double the commitment that is going to community media. The challenge is the mechanics, how? And so Henny will talk a little bit about that. And then I'm going to ask Tasneem just to talk about the issues around coordination, how we've addressed it in our communications policy. She's going to talk about what we have done in terms of assessing the impact of products like Bukus and Zele and PSM magazine. She's going to also talk to some of our electronic products. And I do recall the honorable members, we had made this request once before. And I think the last time we had this conversation, I said, we don't have a problem sharing the information. And all of our products, so for example, from the SMS update that you get in the morning to the opinion pieces, to the key messages, we just wanted some direction. We don't want to be part of the 500 SMSs and emails that you're getting. We prefer if members opt in and you say to us, no, now I want to be part of that group, you can send it to me. Then we can include you into our group. Tasneem will talk about those products as well. The Tucson Service Centers are really important, and I would not be doing them justice if I didn't allow Geraldine to talk about what we're doing on the ground, how we monitor them specifically, and how effective they are in actually implementing government work in communities. She's also going to talk about how we share messages at the local level, and she'll touch on the structures that we have developed to ensure that we get messages to be shared consistently throughout the local level government communication system. The issues around people are, maybe Kitu can talk to the how we are managing the issue of secondment, because it also talks to some of the challenges that the Deputy Minister has pointed to. This is just one of the seconded positions. There are others, and I think Kitu will be able to talk at length about that. And when they're done, if it's possible, if there's time, I will talk a lot about Brand SA, because I think there's a lot of work that we can do to collaborate with Brand SA, and I would like to give you a few examples of what we have done before. So if I can just start with Henny, just on the finances, why we're not meeting the 30%, and what the challenges are in terms of the existing legislation on allocation of budget. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, IBG. With regard to the advertising spend, the current system in government is that each department gets allocated and appropriated advertising budget, such to GCIS. And we do it, or we allocate it for certain functions within our mandate. So does other departments. So to come directly to the question is that, unfortunately, let's call it in this case, unfortunately, is that GCIS do not have control over those advertising budgets. It gets appropriated through the National Treasury System on the vote of those ministries, and the ministries, together with the accounting officers, then takes control over that advertising budget per department. They then spend according to how they deem and see fit to spend. So we have no authority over that spending of that advertising budget. We have spoken about it previously, that how can we get insight and how can we get our hands on that advertising budget of government, and it was not possible at that stage. It needs a total revamp of the whole budget system in government of advertising. It's not as easy as GCIS can get our hands on the budgets of national departments advertising budget. So it's about the system that prevents us to have any authority over that.
Just to add, Chair, what we did do is we also presented to a mechanism. We went to MinComBud and we presented a mechanism where we were going to ring fence 1% of government's total communication budget. And the reason why we propose this is because we don't deny that individual departments have got individual mandates. So if you are in the Department of Energy and you have to promote renewables, you need to have funding for that. But there are certain things that require funding across the entire government, such as social cohesion. So as I speak to you, one of our challenges is when we talk about social cohesion, everybody looks at Department of Arts and Culture, whereas it's actually a national initiative. It should involve all of us. So we had proposed to this ministerial budgeting committee that we should find a mechanism that we can look at all of the communication budgets across the entire government and ring-fence a percentage of that so that we can actually drive focused communication campaigns. Unfortunately, as my colleague has pointed out, it would require that we should come back to Parliament and talk about the budget appropriation process. So the ministers couldn't make the decision on their own. We would have to come back to Parliament and sit and say, how then do we make this work? And I think that is something that can be championed with this portfolio committee, with the assistance of the advisors. I'm quite certain that we can start thinking about legally, within the framework of the existing appropriation cycle, how then do we make sure that communication has a ring-fenced budget. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other response?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Some of the issues that I'm going to be responding to today, I know I've shared with committee members when I was down to do the third quarter and fourth quarter report. But okay, I hear you. You say you're not convinced. So I'm going to try some of those responses in a different way, and also there are some members that were not here. Coherence in government communication is an elusive objective. We've been chasing it since the GCIS was established in 1998. And if I may say, I think what both my colleagues have said is that we may have been a bit naive in the way the GCIS was structured, in the sense that we have very little control over communicators and what they say, and we have less control over their budgets. So there are departments whose communication budgets alone are triple the entire budget of the GCIS. There are departments whose HR recruitment in the communication divisions alone, I'm thinking of the SEPs, for example, are even more than the entire GCIS. So we were structured in such a way that it was, and it was a bit naive, and I think it's something that we, with your help and blessing, it would be good to think about. So given the limited capacity for us to restructure the entire government communication system, one of the things that we've been trying to do for the last 10 years is about introducing norms and standards. And the norms and standards say that this is the way government communicators should behave. The first time we introduced it was in 2008, where we took a set of policy guidelines to Cabinet. Cabinet approved those policy guidelines. And we called it guidelines because at the time, GCIS didn't necessarily have enough clout for us to be able to say to other departments, this is the way you will communicate. So we brought the guidelines. However, even though, and in one of those guidelines, funnily enough, one of the members mentioned adverts with big faces of political principles. It says so in the guidelines. It also says under what circumstances a government department may advertise. For example, a government department should always have a call to action. Save water, save electricity, pay your rates, whatever. Drive safely. We shouldn't be doing just advertising for the sake of selling any kind of product if we're looking at it. So those guidelines were all there. Anyway, we've come back to the circle where we're now that we have a minister, we said let's take these guidelines and make them regulations so that government communicators must know these are the things you are allowed to do as a government communicator, these are the things you are not allowed to do. These are your responsibilities, these are your minister's responsibilities, and these are GCIS's responsibilities. That document even extends down to local government level, and it speaks about the structures within which government communicators must participate. The communications policy was at an advanced state of, it was about to be taken to cabinet. For cabinet's approval, and we've had a new minister appointed. Now, a new minister and a new deputy minister, it would be extremely unfair for us to push them in a position where they would be presenting a document they were not familiar with. So we have sent the communication policy to the minister and to the deputy minister and asked for time in which we can present it to them. But we are at the final stages with this communication policy. Having said that, it still doesn't mean that we'll be able to rein in every government communicator whenever they decide that they're going to go AWOL. Because government communicators also have many different pressures, let's put it that way. And it's difficult for government communicators to say that they will speak in one coherent voice when even their principals are not necessarily doing that in this kind of environment. When we have ministers, and it happens across all political parties, by the way, that various leaders contradict each other in the public space. So it does make it very, very difficult for us to get coherence on that front. But we pursue the matter because, as I said, it remains an elusive objective and we'll continue chasing it. Then the other question was about research that I think Mr. Dipoko asked me to answer right from the beginning. Chairperson and members, we at GCIS conduct extensive public opinion research. We've been doing this research since 2000, and we have built up a significant data set. We'd be very willing to share this research with you. You've probably seen some of it in some of our presentations, but we'd be very willing to share with you. We know that we have been asked by some members, not necessarily in the current sitting portfolio committee, but we'd be very willing to share with you. And it's quite extensive. It covers a lot of different areas. But one of the areas that it covers is how the public rates government performance. And to that end, I must say, in the last slide of the presentation that was received by the researchers, I think it might have been a little bit of broken telephone. But it's not necessarily a given that confidence is completely lost in government. What is true to say is that there's a bit of a mixed bag. So the public very much appreciates the work that is done by government in particularly the areas of welfare, health, and education. And those are continuously receiving accolades from the public on the area of work from government, but in other areas not so strong. It would be, however, true to say that the public has lost trust in government as an institution. And that is also commensurate with having lost trust in all institutions. So the public has also lost trust in the media as an institution. They've also lost trust in business as an institution. And a lot of this is attributed to some of the major scandals taking place worldwide. Media scandals, business scandals, Enrons, the stock exchange crashes and so on, and governments that are continuously failing peoples around the world. So ours is not a unique phenomenon. It's happening around the world as well. I just wanted to bring some of that to light because it's not a given that it's all, you know, it's all, I'm willing to take more questions on that. Then I think Mr. Defoca has asked me to tackle the issue about value add on our products. What we've done at GCIS is we've developed our own segmentation model for government. So this segmentation model is meant to be used by all of government. And what it does is it builds on what the LSM used to do, Living Standard Measure, which in our view was always, it didn't really meet our needs. So we developed our own segmentation model. And in that segmentation model, we're asking ourselves, do we have a product that speaks uniquely to every segment in this model? If not, we need to build it. And so we are in the process of trying to do just that. So for example, although there are overlaps, we do know that radio is listened to in rural areas. It has reach that no other platform has. And so community radio and the SABC's African language station radio stations must be utilized in a government communication campaign. And that's exactly how we roll out the campaign. Then the Vukuzenzele is a newspaper. And I think Mr. Dipoko mentioned 1.7 million copies. When it was decided that this newspaper, we need to increase its frequency, that frequency is, the increase in the frequency is self-funded. And how we do it is by obtaining advertising from government departments. We don't get many, but wherever we do get, we are able to increase the frequency of the Vukuzenzele. One of the things that we are doing with it is we're trying to go electronic with it. So take it to mobile, taking it to an app, a downloadable app, so that more people can access the information. If you're asking whether the information we need is valuable, the research that we've done demonstrates that people enjoy reading it, they want to read it, and they find it necessary to read. And the main reason they find it necessary to read is because of the job opportunities and other opportunities that we are speaking about in Vukuzenzele. We have got photographs of people chasing the truck, bringing the book truck, and actually harassing distributors who are wearing books. So I'm not sure if that's an indication of how popular it is. I think it is, but we might disagree. On the public sector manager magazine, one of the reasons...
But don't there photographs of people sleeping in a meeting?
Okay. Kepa said, I think it you mean you're trying to tell me I must hurry up.
No.
Okay. I'll try.
Communication in action.
But you know, these issues are complex. Although we do seem the simpler department, but I'm going to try and hurry up. So the Public Sector Manager magazine, the idea with it was that civil servants must be empowered with the policies of government. We're getting there. The content is not necessarily having full impact. We've measured this in our research, and people say there could be better content. But the value add is that we do not pay a cent to publish the PSM. Now, this is a model that we can duplicate and triplicate. Why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we get more information out there? So I'm going to stop there, Jefferson, and if there are any more questions, I'll be willing to take them on.
Is it a follow-up on that one? Because there is another spot. Okay. Just hold on there.
I will appreciate if Donald can listen to what I'm going to say. Because the first one, I beg to differ with you on the these complications that you are talking about regarding that audit for the support for community radio. I visited one community radio station. I met with the station manager, who in his boardroom, as we're interacting, one of the questions I raised is this one. How are departments and municipalities assisting you in terms of adverts? He said, hang on. Hardly 5 minutes, he came back with a document. And the document was showing me when last was he supported by a department and how much was involved. When last did a municipality came to advertise and how much? Hardly 5 minutes. So now you are talking about a whole range of other complications, additional stuff, which to me, it does not assist me. All I'm saying is that you know how many community radio stations do we have in the country. Just to send one email, can you just give us an indication of how this department and this was supporting you in the last, say, 12 months? You'll have an idea of exactly what we want. So to me, you are not assisting me if you say there are complications, shortage of staff, and you are not assisting us. Because I'm saying I could get that information within 5 minutes. I had a document. So I'm saying these are some of the mechanisms that you might have to explore so that you know exactly from our side, so that we can then be able to engage with your SALGA and all these other relevant structures to say, why are you not assisting us in this particular area? You don't need additional staff to me to get that information. You talk to these community radios directly, you'll get this information. They have it, it's readily available. They'll tell you when last was held here for an advert and how much was involved, when last was municipality A here, and how much, that's what we want. The last one is the issue that she raised while she was trying to respond to that lack of confidence on government, which to me, I'm bringing this issue for the third time because I'm worried about this issue. When you talk about lack of confidence on government, it's a very serious issue. When was a survey conducted on this particular area? By which institution? How reputable was that institution? So, especially if you document it here, it's an official document of the department. So if it's there, you must tell us which institution was involved in conducting this kind of a survey. So I'm worried about this kind of a thing. So that response to me, it does not assist us by just randomly picking up people saying all is not well. Then you see lack of confidence on government. It's worrisome to me. So that information is not assisting me. I was going to be satisfied as I live here. If you were saying we have appointed this institution. This institution has been doing this kind of work for some time. We requested them to conduct a survey, and these are the results. And now you come here to this Portfolio Committee on Communications with a document that says lack of confidence on government. It's wrong. Thanks.
You know how to vote? Yeah, that's 500 emails.
Yes.
Take advice.
I'm done.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Can you, because it's clear that there is no supporting document or supporting information to what Josiah says. That's what the member is saying. And maybe you need to give us more information so that we are very clear that it's not just a statement.
I want to respond on this other one. The first issue which the Honourable Member raised. I think that we are now being unfair to Josias on the issue of the community radio stations vis-a-vis the advertisements and so on. We must remember that MDDA is vested with the responsibility to promote development and diversity in the South African media throughout the country, consistently so. And in that, the objectives of the MDDA, they are outlined very clearly. One being to encourage the channeling of resources to the community media and small commercial media sectors. Now, this question, the Honourable Member must just shelve it for MDDA because that's where it belongs. GCIS won't be able to champion that. They can do it as a by the way, but people that are vested with that responsibility is MDDA. Now, through you, Chair, I would want to plead that this question is also raised by the Honourable Member to the MDDA as a responsible entity in terms of nurturing and resourcing the community radio stations in South Africa, because that's their responsibility, not the responsibility of GCIS. With your respect,
we've raised it already.
Honourable Member. We can't shoot GCIS like that, at least on this one. Then the DG will respond on whether there's empirical evidence to what they are raising in terms of confidence of the people of South Africa to our government. They must respond on that one.
Okay. DG?
Thank you, DM. You're quite right. We do have empirical evidence. I'm going to allow Tasneem just to talk briefly about the methodology. But as I said in the presentation up front, all of the work that we do is informed by research. But she's going to explain the tracker research, how we analyze it, who are the companies that are involved.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me just also repeat, Honourable Members, that you've seen our research before in all of the presentations that we do bring, but I would be very happy for us to put one specially together and just bring it, share it with you so that it can also inform your strategic thinking. The main survey that we do is a continuous survey called a tracker. And this was started in 2000, and it was started by GCIS together with TNS Research Survey and the HSRC. The methodology has never changed. we essentially go out and interview 2,400 people per quarter. And due to budget cuts, we've had to cut from 4 quarters down to 2 quarters. But we still are doing it in the most rural of areas included, which is something that not all research companies can claim. But certainly our tracker does. We have a statistician who weights our data, and she's a statistician who consults to the to StatsSA as well. So we know that our data is properly weighted. So as far as the methodology goes, it is unquestionable. And it's in fact one of the better ones in the country after the census. But Chairperson, also just to be fair, what I was trying to say is that it's not true that there's no confidence in government. I was saying that it's a mixed bag, like it always has been. So, I mean, I don't think that, you know, like it always has been, but there are some things that change over time depending on the policies and programs. So, I think just to, I would suggest that I bring the presentation, like you said, Chair, and then we can talk about it from there.
Okay.
Huh?
Oh, the last one?
No,
okay.
Sir.
Oh.
I just wanted clarity on this thing, because the presentation of on lack of confidence by citizens is not on the GCIS presentation. It was on the content advisor's presentation. So that confusion, I think it must be clarified. Not on our document, but on the document of the content advisor of the committee. Now, I'm confused now if this issue is like thrown to GCIS. How?
No, through you, Chair. When I raised this question...
Let me explain that the analysis of the content advisor is from GCIS documents. It's not it didn't just come up with it. It's from the documents of GCIS. Mr. Ipoko, you're delegating one of the questions to this gentleman.
Chair, I was acknowledging that the analyst didn't thumbsuck the information. But I also wanted to indicate that there were additions on the Conmens and on the Tusong City Centers. But I was acknowledging that indeed it is because we interacted with the research team that they came to that conclusion. The only thing that is different here is we are saying there is more. That was a high-level thing, but we have offered to bring the rest of the data so that we can have a look.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Thanks. But I'm not sure, Honorable said. I think what I hear is that if there is a mixed bag, so South Africans can't just move one direction. So I think that explanation satisfies you and me, and it satisfies the committee. Because you can't get 100% people saying they have confidence in government. That can't be scientific. Any last response? Yeah, court.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Member.
I forget your name.
Oh, Kitumeza Simakane.
Simakane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
you, Bambi.
Thank you, Chairperson. The acting DG has advised that I respond on the issue of the Conment, that is the Chief Director, Products and Platforms. The question was why we don't have a person acting in that position when the person has been seconded. this position or this person has been reluctantly seconded to the office of the deputy president, and it is almost 2 years now, and the condition of the secondment was that it will be attached to the full term of the deputy president. So as long as the deputy president is still there, it means the secondment will last in terms of the agreement. It has had a negative impact on service delivery regarding that position, because there is this rule from DPSA which is very unfair, that when you have seconded a person, you cannot have another person acting with payment because the post is not vacant. So we are suffering that fate. That is why we don't have a person acting there, because everybody who is in that unit could was not willing to act without payment. And when we realized that we were faced with that situation, we agreed that because the Deputy President's office is paying us for the secondment, let us advertise this post for contract so that we can have a person use that very money. We did that, but unfortunately we didn't get the right person to can fill that post, and we gave up. But about 3 weeks ago, the acting DDG in that position said we must resuscitate that whole process, and we will advertise the post, and once we can get the person, we can correct the situation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Makana, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and Honorable Deputy Minister. I will respond on the one question on the messaging, the sharing of messages into the local government. What we do from national offices on a daily basis, and as we develop communication strategies, media statements, and key messages, we share it with our provincial offices, who will then share it on through different communicators forums. They will have provincial communicators core team meetings. So if there's not a meeting scheduled immediately, they send it through a database. They also share it through the district communicators forum meetings and also local governments. They also share, we also got the electronic database of stakeholders, where we, our communicator, send that information through all the stakeholders in other departments to make sure they receive the messages from government, and this is done on a daily, weekly basis. Then what we also do, we participate in government communicators forum meetings, where we also assist and present on government programs. So if there's a national theme, we will present that. And like for the year, we have participated in 478 forum meetings for the previous financial year. And then during this meeting, our people will also advise local municipalities to go onto the radio, especially municipalities that have been identified as the back-to-basic municipalities and where there's no communicators. We give fully support to that communicators and municipalities to make sure they communicate to the community. And then we have also developed communication strategies for some of the local municipalities, and we have also assist them with capacity building for the new councillors. This is one of the ways how we share our messaging to the local structures. Then the other issue was raised on the Tucson Service Centre, the effectiveness and the functionality of Tucson Service Centre. We've got a bit of problem regarding the effectiveness and functionality of Tucson Service Centres. To date, we've got 198 Tucson Service Centres. We as GCIS is busy doing analysis on the functionality of the Tucson Service Centres, where we are busy doing an audit, where we and DPSA is visiting the provinces ourselves, doing an assessment, make sure that they are still aligned to what is the criteria of a Tucson Service Centre. For the last 2 years, a lot of Tucson Service government departments have moved out of the Tucson Service Centres because there was a lot of youth hubs built. There's social development, who's launching new community centers, and then some of the government departments are moving out of Tusong service centers, which have a negative impact on the functionality of Tusong service centers. We've done a study with DPSA and the technical team of Treasury, and we have realized that the Tusong service centers that are managed by local government and housing in provinces, they are the best Tusong service centers regarding functionality. Where the Tusong service centers are managed by the Office of the Premier, there's a lot of problems, but we are having meetings now. We already have meetings with three provinces where we're assisting them and busy to do this audit so that we can develop a report. So in the next 3 months, we will have a detailed analysis report on the functionality of the Tusong service center regarding how many, and we're going to take it from the list, because if there's no services, the lead department must sign it off so that we can service them and bring other services into the Tusong service center. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Members, I think we have done well. We had all the time today, not a 3-hour thing. It was a thorough. Tomorrow, Ndinga Libali, we are in committee room 1, committee room 2. A committee room 2, a 120 place, up next door. That's where we'll be tomorrow. I'm sure you do have what we're going to do. Except that other members choose to go to other committees tomorrow. They choose to go to other committees. Members, I think we're done for today. I must open my tablet just to remind you what we are doing tomorrow. Over and above the entities that we are going to meet tomorrow, how many sets of minutes do we have? We can't sit with a lot of minutes without adopting them. Is your agenda open? What are we doing tomorrow? I know tomorrow is ICASA and FPB. That is telling 11. It's starting at 9:30. Honorable Kumbela, he says, what time do we start tomorrow? Are we starting at 11? Now we are starting at 9:30. FPB and ICASA, room 2, committee room 2, 120 plane. Thank you very much, DM, with your department, both departments. It was the Lender HSI at the time, and it's an appendage of communication. It's not. Just that. The meeting is not adjourned yet. We're meeting tomorrow, DM and your team, 9:30, committee room 2, 120 Plain Street. Thank you very much, the meeting is adjourned. I'm waiting.
Tomorrow is one thing.
But
they probably are able to work tomorrow.
No, they're
He's coming out guns blazing.